I'm calling the meeting to order because in addition to our agenda, there's of course a very important agenda going around the table. Those of you who were part of our committee the last 2 years know that Larissa Peltola had a little baby, and Larissa Peltola is also not Peltola anymore, but Fisher, I think, right? Mm-hmm. So we are delighted. Those of you who may not know, was our research person for a couple of years on this committee, so we are delighted to see this little baby. And there's Representative Erdahl coming to see the baby as well. Okay, we've called the meeting to order. We do not yet have an agenda, so we'll begin with the Department of Human Services. And these are, we have four departments, four agencies, and we're interested in getting an update on recent bonding initiatives and where you are with those projects. And this must be Alan Van Buskirk and Bill Olson at the table, right?
That's correct, Manager.
And we're going to be joined by Dennis Benson. It's going to be hard for those of us who have worked with him for a while to imagine that he really is DHS. I've constantly get disoriented because I'm still thinking corrections when we hear him. So welcome to the committee and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Alan Van Buskirk. I'm Facilities Manager for State Operated Services, Department of Human Services. With me is Bill Olson. He's Physical Plant Operations Manager. And as you said, in addition, Dennis Benson, CEO for Minnesota Sex Offender Program, or MSOP, will provide you with an update on the expansion project at Moose Lake, at the MSOP facility in Moose Lake. We understand the purpose of the meeting is to provide you with an update on the status of the department's asset preservation appropriations and recent bonding project funded with recent bonding bills. Accordingly, we have distributed a report. The Department of Human Services Asset Preservation and Bond Project Summary Report, February 2009, for your review. I would like to begin our presentation first by providing some basic information about the department's state-owned facilities. The Department of Human Services, DHS, operates two divisions that utilize state-owned facilities: State Operated Services and the Minnesota Sex Offender Program. State Operated Services currently operates four campus-based facilities: Anoka Metro Regional Treatment Center, Brainerd Regional Treatment Center, the Minnesota Extended Treatment Options Program, MITO, Cambridge, and the Minnesota Security Hospital in St. Peter. SOF also operates Minnesota State Operated Community Services, MSOC, a community-based program for developmentally disabled persons. MSOP operates 113 homes and 21 work program centers for developmentally disabled persons throughout the state. 58 of the residential sites and all the work program sites are leased. The state owns 55 MSOP homes. In addition, State Operated Services leases facilities for 10 community behavioral health hospitals and community addiction recovery enterprises throughout the state. Minnesota Sex Offender Program operates the MSOP facility at Moose Lake and several buildings on the St. Peter campus. In addition, MSOP is currently finishing the construction of the first phase of a two-phase project designed to expand bed capacity for the Moose Lake MSOP facility by 800 beds. As mentioned earlier, Dennis will provide us with an update on this project later in our presentation.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Bill Olson. I'll be giving just a quick overview of the Asset Preservation Report. The Asset Preservation Project Summary Report provided on pages 2 and 3 outline the projects that have been funded with these appropriations. In FY05, the legislature appropriated $1,014,000 for system-wide roof renovation and replacement and $3 million for asset preservation projects at DHS facilities. As of this month.
And we didn't fully fund, we don't see that anywhere. It just shows what our appropriation was, so it doesn't indicate the unmet need there. I mean, we approved only a portion of your asset preservation,
that's
I think,
correct.
Right?
Chair, as part of the handout on the back pages, I'm not sure the numbers, but there's a list of projects that's kind of an ongoing list that we can talk about a little bit
okay.
later.
Okay. So we've got something there for the future that we see.
Yeah. So in FY05, there was an appropriation of $1,014,000 for roofs. As of this month, we've allocated $1,013,000 of that for roof replacement. and asset preservation project at almost $3 million, $2,975,000. So the appropriations that were made in 05 are pretty well taken care of at this point. In FY06, the legislature appropriated $1.5 million for roof renovation and replacement, and $3 million in asset preservation for DHS facilities. The appropriation language allowed us to use any portion of the asset preservation funding to design the second phase of the MSOP expansion. Because of the urgent need for those facilities at MSOP, the $3 million of asset preservation money was used to facilitate the design for the second phase, the second 400 beds for the MSOP project at Moose Lake. The $1,215,000 for roof appropriation has been expended. So there again, we've got most of our roof taken care of too out of that allocation. In FY05, $3 million were appropriate for asset preservation and betterment. We have completed the allocations of these funds earlier this month, and as you can see, a majority of the funds will be used to bring our elevators up to code and compliance according to the new elevator code.
Madam Chair, I have provided a handout, in the handout on pages 4 and 5, an update on the DHS bonded projects for 2005, 2006, and 2008. If you would like, I can go through those individually, but it will take quite a bit of time.
I think we'll just do an overview if you want to call attention to anything, a significant issue. Otherwise, I think members can just quickly... Okay, Representative House has a question.
Thank you. On page 4, because I live just across this road from Agua Ching, you have it listed here as campus sold, demo complete. Now, the demo is not complete, but do you, because, are you, have you paid off on it so your job is complete, or what does complete mean?
Representative House. I guess my understanding is that almost all of the demolition is complete, but there's some grading and groundwork that needs to be done, and there may be some, and I guess I refer to building demolition, there may be some underground utilities that Cass County is looking at doing some additional demolition from. The money was granted to Cass County. Cass County is responsible for the demolition, and my understanding is that the buildings are all demolished. Is that not correct?
Madam Chair, the buildings are demolished, and there's a very large pile of brick.
Right.
They're not hauled away yet.
No.
A lot of it is, but the job, I just wanted to know if you're complete, have you paid Cass County? Are we done with them?
Madam Chair, we have not paid all of the grant money to Cass County.
Okay.
The money is paid based on the percentage of completion. So we have a retainage, and we won't pay the whole thing until it's actually all complete.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, on page 4 of the handout, basically the project and laws of 2005 are pretty much complete. The law projects and laws of 2006, I'll quickly go over them. $41 million was allocated for the design and construction of the first phase of expansion in Moose Lake. That project is about 90% complete. We're looking at occupying the facility in June of 2009. There's a St. Peter, the money was appropriated for St. Peter Regional Treatment Center for a program and activity building, $2.5 million. That project is designed, and the bids are scheduled to be open tomorrow, and we're hoping for good bids so that the project can proceed. It's about 9 to 12 months of construction time on that project, Bill. We have system-wide security upgrades of $5 million. Almost all of that work is complete. There's a little work at Anoka that we are just in the design process, but we're moving fast on that and hope to have that done by the fall of 2009. We had $5 million appropriated for system-wide redevelopment, reuse, and demolition, and $5 million was appropriated. That money was utilized to facilitate the sale of the Fergus Falls Regional Treatment Center to the City of Fergus Falls. The City of Fergus Falls is in the process of working with developers to redevelop and reuse a major portions of that campus. As of last, a week ago Monday, our last program relocated from the Fergus Falls RTC campus. The city owns the facility, and I wish them luck with it in the future. Well, the campus, the main building was constructed in 1890. It's a quarter of a mile long, 50 feet wide, four stories tall. Cost $1.5 million to heat it in fiscal year 2006. It's something that I'm happy to be rid of. We had money at a system-wide roof replacement in 2006. The work at St. Peter and Cambridge is complete. We have the money allocated for Brainerd. We're waiting to see what happens with the buildings that we're keeping at Brainerd, what happened during the winter, to see which buildings we have to address with those funds. The loss of 2008, we had $3.4 million. For system-wide redevelopment, reuse, and demolition. That money's been allocated for Brainerd. It's going to be utilized, it's being utilized, for hazardous material survey, asbestos abatement design for a number of buildings that we plan to demolish, and installation of independent heating, ventilation, air conditioning, and electrical systems in the three buildings that we plan to retain. There was money appropriated for early childhood learning and child protection facilities, but the governor vetoed that. There was $150,000 granted for West Central, to Polk County, for a West Central multi-county secure treatment facility. That grant is executed. The project is underway. I think there was a report issued to the legislature this month. The pre-design is scheduled for completion June 30th of this year. Hennepin County, there was a grant for Hennepin County for pre-design the design of outpatient clinic and health education facility at the Hennepin County Medical Treatment Center. That includes teaching clinics and education centers. The allocation or the appropriation was for $820,000. The Department of Administration is administering that grant, and my understanding is that they are very close to having a final grant language complete and are getting close to executing that agreement for the pre-design.
And I seem to recall seeing something, they're going to use some of their federal stimulus dollars for that project.
And the last project from 2008 was $135,000 for a grave markers or memorial for the Remembering the Dignity project. That a grant is handled through the Department of Human Services. It's been executed, and Remembering with Dignity is working hard and fast on that project. And looking forward to installing additional gravestones at Rochester, I think a few at St. Peter, a few at Hastings, and they plan to complete the work at the Moose Lake Cemetery on the old State Hospital campus.
Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, members, if you take a look at page 6 through 10, it's just a list of preliminary project list of projects that we're looking at. We're categorizing those into four major categories: asset preservation projects, roof repairs and replacements, energy-related projects, and safety and security projects. And the objective of this priority list is to identify just what we know that's out there right now. We will be looking at establishing preliminary cost estimates, recommended funding sources, and set project priorities. And we will continue to track the progress and status of those. The majority of these projects on the list do meet the requirements of asset preservation as outlined in MS-16B.307, Asset Preservation Appropriations. If the department's goal is to preserve and improve the existing facilities, and as Alan indicated, we've got many of them that are fairly old out there. We just renovated a building in St. Peter that was built in 1866. And we continue to do that by addressing what the critical repair, replacement, and renewal needs are specific to the physical plant at each of the DHS facilities. If there's any questions regarding that list?
I was just curious how you determine which goes in the 2009 and which goes in the 2010-11 is are those projects ready, or they one depends on the other, so one has to be done first, or?
Madam Chair, the projects that are in 2009 are the projects that remain from our 2008 project request that we, there were not adequate funds to implement. Then the 2010, 2011, 2012, 2013 are
the new request.
Basically, yeah. Requests that are prioritized for those years. Now, this is kind of a standing list, and there could be something in 2012, listed in 2012, that something could happen that caused us to move that to 2009 in the upcoming months.
Mm-hmm. So the total of what we didn't fund last year from your request is almost $14 million, is that right? On page 10?
Well, Madam Chair, last year we requested... our final request, the governor's recommendation, was $5 million for asset preservation, and the legislature appropriated $3 million for DHS asset preservation.
But your request had been, to the governor, had been larger than that.
It was larger. Originally, it was larger than that, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Madam Chair, if there are no questions, Dennis Spencer would like to make
all
a
right.
presentation. On the
Minnesota
Sex Offender Program.
No questions of these two gentlemen. And I think some of you already heard the this particular project in, what was it, in a joint finance and ways and means, or where did we?
Just finance.
Yeah, finance.
Madam Chair, can I just ask a question?
Colbert.
Of what the Anoka Metro Regional Treatment Center is being used for? I don't know if that's a correct sentence or not, but...
Mr. Van Buster.
I'm sorry, I missed that question.
Repeat the question, please.
The facility at Anoka Metro Regional Treatment Center, what is the clientele that's using this center?
Madam Chair, the facility treats the mentally ill, the adult mentally ill.
Okay. And can I just have a follow-up then, what's on Brainerd?
Brainerd has a program for our chemically dependent. It also provides treatment for traumatic brain injury.
Madam Chair, just one follow-up. The capacity of the regional treatment center, is it 100% full, 50% full, 10% full?
Mr. Dunbuster.
Madam Chair, representative of all of them? Or?
Well, how about Anoka?
Madam Chair, a representative of the Anoka facility runs pretty close to being 100%. I'd say on average over 90% full.
How about Brainerd?
Well, we have at least six empty vacant buildings at this point in time, Madam Chair.
Thank you. That's it. That's it.
Further? Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Van Buster. Can you just tell me, will there be any graves left to identify on when this grant is complete?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, there will be significant graves left. The Fergus Falls Regional Treatment Center has over 4,000 graves, and we haven't started that project. And I think there's probably almost 2,000 left in Rochester that are not marked.
And I will say, Representative Murphy, they did request the entire amount. We tried to determine how much can they do in 1 year. And that's what we funded. It was a small amount. There's only so much they can accomplish, I think, right?
Remembering with dignity, the group that does this work under grant for the state of Minnesota is a small organization that has one full-time person and several part-time people. They do a lot of this work by having a lot of community involvement at the communities with the cemeteries. They have a very involved group at Rochester and in St. Peter, and they're hoping to develop a similar participation at Moose Lake when they start that work there.
Follow up, Representative Murphy? No further questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Dennis Benson. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Sex Offender Program. I'm going to go through some slides here very quickly just to give you an update of the progress on Phase 1, the building that we are adding to the Moose Lake facility. MSOP is located at two sites, both St. Peter We have about 175 beds currently, and up at the Moose Lake Hospital, where we're currently around 150 to 175, and then we are renting two buildings from Corrections that house approximately 200. This next slide just simply indicates our growth curve, both historically and what we're predicting into the future. Again, we don't have the same kind of history that we used to have in Corrections in terms of trying to do population projections, but we've been pretty close the last couple of years. I would caution that projections are pretty accurate for the first year or two, and they do change as existing laws and practices change. So we're predicting about 70, 75 a year for the next several years, and that starts to ramp up further out. But again, I would caution it, every year we get more history, and those projections could change. Next slide just indicates where we're at in terms of beds. The black at the bottom, of course, is existing beds at the St. Peter campus and the Moose Lake campus. The white bars in 2007-2008 are the beds that we are renting from the prison up at the Moose Lake facility, or next to the Moose Lake facility. And the yellow in the middle is the phase one bonding, the 400 bed facility that should be.
You okay?
We need a new appropriation.
New chair.
I don't think it's bondable. Got to buy them in for them, Madam Chair.
Prison industry.
There you go.
It is broken. I can see from the here. Oh, my goodness. Oh my God!
I'll hold it up.
Okay, Alan, we're right.
Oh yeah.
Get out of the check.
Well, let's give some matching
mid cards up.
Mid cards.
Get out of the crack. This is something.
Oh. Well, we're bond for what we have to look into the lawsuit.
I don't know.
Okay, I think we're ready.
I'm glad I wasn't doing open heart surgery. Anyway, the yellow in the middle is the building that is scheduled to open somewhere between middle of June and July 1. That will service until late 2011, and then with existing projections, that building will be full. So we continue to be squeezed for space. This is just some history on the existing building. I wasn't around when this thing was bonded, but historical documents tell us, that you can call two, 3 years ago historical, that initially the projected completion date was in 2008, and it's bounced around a little bit. We've had some issues with the construction up there, but we've got it, I think, on track now, and we're hoping for an occupancy date of around July 1. We hope to get the building around May 1, which gives us a month or so to debug it, clean it, and get ready for occupancy. These are just some pictures of what's going on up there. You can see that these are only a couple weeks old, so they're working fast and feverishly up there, but I went through it yesterday, and they're making good progress, so hopefully that July 1 date is a good date. We need to get out of the building because we haven't asked for additional dollars to rent additional beds from Corrections after July 1. So we're trying very hard to keep the contractor on task here so that we can occupy on time. This is what it looks like from the air. You can see how it's configured in relation to the existing facility up there. And in a moment here, we'll get to what the phase two would look like if it's bonded at some point into the future. Phase one has the red around it, and the phase two building is to the lower right of phase one. The total cost is $150 million. Phase two with the infrastructure will cost around $96 million. Just to kind of go through that infrastructure, the yellow
is really includes a number of things that we really need for phase one: kitchen, dining, 10 treatment rooms, some recreation space, library, canteen, assessment center, religious resource storage, and some activities space as well. The 6.8, or the red, is education, a security center, and some vocational industry production space. And then the 3.5 million piece at the bottom is warehouse and additional vocational industry space. Remember, we're going to have close to 1,000 patients up there when these two buildings are full, along with the existing building. The existing building will be able to access this infrastructure. So with this brings lots of efficiencies when, or if and when, phase two is bonded. Those thousand patients will be able to take advantage of that infrastructure, which should bring our costs down. And of course, we're trying to be good stewards of the taxpayer dollars here, so it behooves us all. I think at some point, we are in three different locations right now. Our per diem for this program is high. As you know, a year ago it was about $368 a day. This year we're reporting $348. When we get into phase one, we think it's going to be down in, around $315. And once phase two is full, we think we're going to be around $280 a day. So that's pretty consistent with what we see in other civil commit programs around the country. Wisconsin, I believe, is $281 a day.
I was just going to ask about that, whether other states have similar policies and thus similar expensive infrastructure.
Madam Chair, there are 20 states now that have civil commit programs, and the federal government is in the process of developing one. One of our clinical directors just testified before, I believe, the Louisiana legislature. They're contemplating one. So this is a relatively new industry out there. It is growing, again, because we are required to provide treatment to anybody who wants treatment. Today we have about 80% participation. Clinical staff obviously aren't cheap. They are professional staff, and again, to provide that training, we have, as the population grows, so does the number of clinical staff.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A year and a half ago when we were up there, one of the a piece of the request before us was to do utility connections, power lines, other things. Has that been rectified? Because that was a big question mark with the committee that, you know, I don't know that we've paid for utilities to connect and do upgrades in the past. And how are you running then the power? What, give us the update on that.
Mr. Benson.
Madam Chair and Representative Junkie, that that remains an issue. It, however, only remains an issue at such a point that phase two is bonded. There's adequate capacity, sewer and water capacity, and electrical capacity for phase one. But as we look forward to phase two, those issues are still outstanding. And I believe the price tag on those is around $5 or $6 million.
And again, Madam Chair, is that going to be a part of your request, or are you just totally, which you should, in my opinion, put that back on the community and the utility companies and others? You know, they're getting the benefit of the development. I would think they're the ones that should be running the lines. Or are you bringing that as part of your request?
Madam Chair and Representative, as you know, at this point, we don't have a request in for phase two. We have begun discussions. I believe discussions actually began a year ago. We have done pre-design. Historically, my history would suggest that in corrections, we have not included those kinds of issues. However, they have had a way of worming into bonding bills, as we all know. So I believe that at such a time that this request throws legs with the administration, it would be our request, not utilities. Thank you.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Assistant Commissioner Benson. A couple of questions. First, the difference between Moose Lake and other, like in Stillwater or other prisons, is Moose Lake more secure, less secure? Are there any differences?
Mr. Benson, and probably we have to note at this point the reason you've been transferred to DHS is we don't call this a prison, right?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
My mistake. I am. It's
a technicality, I think.
Madam Chair and Representative Erdahl, certainly public safety and security is the fundamental responsibility that we take very seriously with respect to this population. We can't ignore the fact that about 97% of these people came from corrections. When I walk through these institutions, I'm no stranger to the 500 people. We had most of them in corrections. So, and I think we all remember the bad days that DHS had back in 2005 and 2006 regarding the escape from St. Peter. So we have done some things to shore up security at both sites. So they're secure facilities. I don't know that I would rate them like an Oak Park Heights facility, but certainly they are secure treatment facilities. Lots of accountability. We do have counts throughout the day, and we understand where everybody is at. Also at the St. Peter campus, there are people, however, that as you complete primary treatment and you're into the reintegration piece, you might get what we call campus privileges. But even those folks are on GPS or ankle bracelet monitoring if they do have campus privileges.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Assistant Commissioner Benson. I just wondering from one of your charts showing that the number of people continuing to increase. Now, is that do we have more offenders now, or are we doing a better job of finding and convicting? What's your opinion?
We just never let them out.
We passed the law.
Madam Chair and Representative Erdahl, I don't know that I'm the expert on that. My opinion would be kind of all of the above. I think that Minnesota takes this issue very seriously. Obviously, we had a very tragic incident back in 2003 that I think gave rise to this issue and trying to understand who these people are and try to figure out those that we can incarcerate that we don't believe are safe enough to live in the community. We have civil commitment laws in Minnesota that go back to the early 90s that have been tested, and we have a large civil commitment program in Minnesota, one of the largest in the nation. You go through the profiles of the folks that are there, I think we can make a good case that public safety is being served well. I do believe that consistent with our charge, we have to do what we can to try to treat them. But I think it's all of the above. I think there's a heightened awareness on the part of the courts, the prosecutors, law enforcement. I think there's a climate in Minnesota that might be more conducive to reporting. Many sex offenses are not reported, even in Minnesota, but I think there's been a lot of attention paid to this issue over the years, and it's just part of that continuum of good public safety policy.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Assistant Commissioner. My question is about the two buildings that you're currently renting from corrections, the 200 beds. When those people move then to the new facility, will those beds still be available for future use? And are those beds becoming more available, or what would be the future projection of that, and why can't we use those beds?
Mr. Benson.
Madam Chair and Representative, corrections is here. I'd let them comment too, but I was there when we negotiated this deal, and it was always a temporary deal. It's very expensive. Because we rent those beds from corrections. Corrections turns around then and rents beds from the private facility out in Appleton, Minnesota. So essentially, we're sort of paying for this population twice. It's not a good situation from a cost perspective.
can also tell you that our treatment staff, if they were here today, they would tell you that they're not designed to provide treatment. They are basically housing units, and the groups that occur over there are occurring in hallways and recreation areas, and it just isn't consistent with how we would design a civil commit sex offender treatment environment. So there are cost issues, there are architectural issues, and certainly these costs are passed on to corrections too, having 250 inmates displaced out to the prison in Appleton. In some ways it works, in other ways it doesn't, and I think they'd like to get those beds back. I think it's part of their long-range bed space plan is to get those beds back.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a follow-up question for Representative Junkies. He was talking about utility lines, but I want to ask you about your plans for producing your electricity there. You have, or heating your hot water. What are your plans where everybody else is making progress in that direction? What are you doing?
Mr. Benson.
Madam Chair and Representative, again, the pre-design, as I understand it, has been complete for the phase two of the building. It has not been bonded yet. I believe I defer to Mr. Van Buster here, but I believe our plans was to simply draw power, water, and sewer from the local municipality there. We have had some conversation with them, so I don't know that we've gone any further than that with respect to producing our own energy.
Anything further, Mr. Van Buster?
Madam Chair, one issue of the idea, we would like to look at the idea of using groundwater heat source, but we have such a limited site. We actually had to purchase, I think, 60 acres from the state park system for this facility. And they're not really too anxious for us to purchase additional property. And besides the property, some of the remaining property is wetland, so there's limits to what we can disturb for that type of heating program. We would look at the possibility, of providing, using our generators for off-peak generation in the summertime to help the local utilities in the future.
Doesn't sound real creative to me. Have you looked at heating your hot water with solar?
We have not as part of this project.
It seems to me that in all of the other folks that we talk with, when we talk to university folks, other folks, they're all very aware that we should be reducing our carbon footprint, and I don't know why the Department of Corrections or
in this case,
Human Services doesn't follow that or have that same ethic, and I'm troubled by that.
Mr. Spencer.
Madam Chair and Representative Lugenius, I certainly understand your concern, and I can tell you that when I was the Deputy Commissioner in Corrections, we had begun some analysis of the feasibility of wind-generated power at one of our facilities. That is quite a process, and I don't know where that's at, but when I left, they were still in the process of trying to determine whether or not it would be feasible at one site. So we took the conversation that we had with you down at Faribault very seriously, and we did start to look at some of these alternative methods of generating energy. But as you know, it's not easy. At the particular site that we were talking about, there may have been some environmental issues with a wind-powered generator, but I think it certainly is something that
government ought to get involved in. But from our perspective, we're trying to get this thing up and running, and certainly I'm sure if at some point the administration decides to bond us, we could certainly continue to have those conversations.
You could tell her. You could tell this is a big issue because we still have Dean Scott and Solberg. But it occurs to me, Representative Guinness, that the Moose Lake location is represented by Representative Hilty. We perhaps have to have a discussion with him to engage him in the.
I would enjoy that conversation.
Creative problem solving here on this particular issue.
I think perhaps you can look at some of your fellow state agencies, as I see DNR looking at windmills and geothermal and solar on remote sites, that everybody else has been able to do that kind of problem solving, I would expect that you could too.
And Chair, we will definitely look into that as we proceed with the next phase of the project.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, could you talk a little bit about, we had some legislation to move some of the folks who were in the sex offender program back into jail if they were goofing up and not complying with what they're supposed to be doing, to make it easier to suck them back into corrections at significantly lower cost to us. How is that going, and is there, as this population swells from 500 to 1,000, is there going to be, do you need more latitude from us to do that?
Madam Chair and Representative Dean, we are doing that, and Corrections has been an excellent partner in that regard. I believe today we have just under 70 dual commit patients who are still under corrections authority. And that would be the only group that we have that latitude. If they aren't still committed to the Commissioner of Corrections, we can't put them back in prison or jail unless they commit a criminal offense and are convicted and then sentenced. And we've done that in a couple of occasions too. But for the folks that come to us and they have what we call corrections time hanging, their sentence has not expired yet, if they're not participating in treatment, if they are problematic in our population, the corrections staff come over, hold a hearing, just as they would a supervised release person on the streets, and if they rise to the level that they believe that release to us should be revoked, they bring them back to prison. And again, we have about, I think it's 66 or 67. It's kind of a moving target. I just got an email today. Somebody else went back. The good news with that is our treatment participation has gone from about 50% up to 80%, because some of these folks have had another agenda, are no longer involved in the programming. So it makes it easier for those that want to actively participate to participate. So that has helped ease the burden.
Did you have a follow-up?
Yep, I think that it would make sense to continue to do that if there's a $200 a day per person difference. If they don't want to be there, they should be in jail if they have time hanging. Can you talk a little bit about the cost overruns and time overruns at Moose Lake, what the aggregate change order costs are in time and in personnel, and also, if you had a construction manager at risk for that project, and what we might be able to do to make sure that that doesn't happen again.
Madam Chair and Representative Dean, yeah, the aggregate total, we had to rent beds. We were funded to rent beds, I believe, until about October of 2008. So the rent-a-bed bill came up to another $5.5 million. To rent until next July 1. In addition to that, DHS assumed that if they got into the building a year ago, that the savings, the efficiencies of the new 400-bed facility would be about $7.5 million. So that's about $13 million of the cost overruns. In addition to that, after the two high visibility escapes from St. Peter, they had to move about, I think it was 70 or 80 patients who were problematic from St. Peter up to Moose Lake and up into the corrections buildings that they had no experience with. So they staffed them at a level that was consistent with, if they were going to air, it was going to be on the side of staff safety and public safety. So the salary bill was an additional piece of that overrun. So I think it was, in retrospect, it was the responsible thing to do. We have done some things in the past year to bring that deficit down. It was actually, they were on a trajectory to end up at about a $25 million deficit, and we brought that down to $16 million. So, and then just incredible growth that was not anticipated. Again, I think a lot of interesting things happened on the heels of the 2003 tragedy, and as you know, referrals increased, rightfully so. And I think Minnesota as a whole has really said that if we're going to err here, if we're going to err on the side of public safety, and it has cost some money, but at the same time, I would submit that it was the responsible path to take.
Sure, Cindy.
I just want to reiterate that I think we need to look at perhaps the bidding compliances that we have for, as industry does, to have an at-risk party that would not have taken up the entirety of those overruns, but certainly would have had somebody on the hook other than us for that. And I think it's probably something that all the agencies need to look at when we're bidding these things out.
Madam Chair and Representative Dean, I agree with you, and I can tell you that the Department of Administration has done an outstanding job of keeping the pressure on this construction company, to the point where the company has added additional people and additional staff. We have added a project manager, and we have been able to crank back. A year ago when I got there, the projected occupancy date was October of 2009. So we've rolled that back to July, which saves us several million dollars too. So I think we've all learned some things from this, and certainly the other point I would make in corrections, we did lots and lots of bonding. I think somewhere around a half a billion dollars in the last 20 years. We had a lot of experience with projecting when something will start, when it will be completed, the impact of climates and all of those kinds of things. So we got pretty good at it. We weren't so good at it in the beginning. And on the DHS side, while they've done lots of demolition, they haven't done the same level of building that we have in corrections.
Thank you. Mr. Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious, I'm a newcomer to this, and how many square feet are in each phase of this facility?
Mr. Van Buxer, that sounds like information they might have to get to you, right?
Madam Chair, that's correct. I
okay.
don't have that at
thank you.
My time at this point, but I will make a note of that.
Okay, thank you. Representative Colbert.
Madam Chair, mine is not a construction one, but a curiosity. Who pays, which unit of government pays for the civil commitment proceedings?
Mr. Benson.
Madam Chair,
answer quickly if you can.
I'll try. It's not, as you would expect, it's not an easy answer. But when someone is on what we call civil commitment hold status, the county pays 100% of that. So until they're actually finally reach final civil commitment, the county pays 100%. After they're civilly committed, the county pays 10%, the state pays 90%.
Thank you.
Representative Mullery, we're anxious to move on to the other one, Will.
Madam Chair, just I think a correction. I believe that that's what's happening, but the legislature did pass a bill that said we would pay it. We just have never financed what we were supposed to pay.
Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have one just quick question. I know this is not a locked situation. It's not prison, but it's secure. What is a typical living quarters? What does it look like And how is it different than corrections? So where does this cost come from that we have to look at?
Madam Chair, Representative Eastland, we have unfortunately three sites, as I indicated, and kind of a mixed bag. But the two 400-bed units that we're building are very similar to what was designed down at Faribault or Lionel Lake, the K building concept, except these have one more wing, two 98-bed wings, three 68-bed wings, and the one significant difference is the bunks are, they are double rooms. Bunks are side by side instead of on top of each other like they are in correction. So with that construction element, we will gain lots of efficiencies going forward.
But I think to his question, the facilities are the same. What drives the cost is the programming,
exactly.
not the facility. Okay, I think we thank you very much, and we'll try to catch up a little bit of time here with the Department of Corrections. David Chris. And members, you do have handouts for each of these. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members,
And we'll assume that the members, once you reference the handout, that they can skim down and see the line by line, and that you would give some broad summary statements.
Madam Chair, my name is David Crist. I'm Assistant Commissioner with the Department of Corrections. That is exactly my intention.
Okay.
So, thank you for the opportunity to allow us to present the status of past and present projects and our asset preservation needs. During the 2008 session, we were awarded funding for a $5 million vocational building at the Red Wing Juvenile Facility. We anticipate completion of that building in July of 2009. We received money, $16 million, for Phase 3 at Faribault for a new intake unit and demolition of certain buildings there. We anticipate completion of that in March of 2011, and we received $10 million of our $16 million request for asset preservation projects, and I'll go into that in more detail in just a moment.
And so there are two handouts. One is one that looks like this, which gives us the progress report, and then you have the long-term asset preservation needs that have not been funded.
Madam Chair, yes, ma'am. In the session of 2006, we received $19.6 million for the segregation unit, a new segregation unit at Stillwater. That project was completed, and we moved offenders into that unit last fall. We also received $5.4 million for a new 92-bed housing unit at Shakopee. In 2006, that project was completed recently, and we are occupying that unit. We also received almost $28 million for Faribault Phase 2. That was for a K building and program space. That is to be completed in March of this year. We will move into that K building. From 2005, that's when we received $85 million for the Faribault Phase 1. That was three K-shaped living units in that facility and a dining unit in that facility. Going back to asset preservation from last year, we received $10 million. We have funded about $6.5 million of those projects right now, upgrading the secure perimeter at Oak Park Heights, installing an emergency generator at Faribault, re-roofing buildings at Lino Lakes, Faribault, and Stillwater. We are using a portion of that money to convert the old segregation unit at Stillwater into a general population living unit. And then we use some of that money to abate asbestos at Faribault, and we are upgrading the ventilation system at Oak Park Heights with the money that we received last year. We've got approximately $3.5 million of asset preservation money unencumbered and without projects assigned to it from last year. I'm trying to make that last the rest of this fiscal year and next fiscal year, Madam Chair.
This and next fiscal year? Why would you be planning to have it last through the next 2 years, just out of curiosity?
Well, Madam Chair, I'm talking fiscal 9 and 10. We don't have a bonding request in for this session, and so trying to make that last to deal with any of the emergencies, the leaky roofs we don't know about yet, the boilers that might fall apart, the pipes that might burst between now and then.
But you would anticipate asking for something for next year?
In next session, Madam Chair, yes. I have included a very long list of long-term asset preservation needs. This is what we refer to as the deferred maintenance iceberg. It's still in the neighborhood of $197 million. And as you suggested, we'll let members peruse that list on their own, Madam Chair. But the final document that we included is the RAP project data sheet. That stands for Request for Asset Preservation. We spent some time in this past year trying to devise an objective process by which to award asset preservation money to our different facilities. And we came up with this RAP sheet process. It takes into account the asset condition, the percentage past the useful life of that asset. We give a score for security, a score for safety needs, and the impact that not doing the project has on our facilities. And we came up with a list of about 47 projects that we're trying to give pretty immediate attention to. Of the 47 projects, there's about 22 roof projects there, 5 projects that have to do with tuck pointing, parapets, and fascia of our facility, about 5 projects that have to do with security.
Is this list on this list?
There is some overlap, Madam Chair.
The RAP one would have been in your long range plan.
Madam Chair, yes, ma'am.
Representative Tamar, you're welcome to come to the table with you. We invited today Representative Humphrey, Tamar, and Khan because we're looking at their bonding projects and just in case they wanted to get a quick update as well. But you're welcome to come to the table, Representative. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Chris, I was wondering what you're referring to as a K building. What's the definition of a K building?
The K building is a living unit that we built first at Lino Lakes, and it's in the shape of a letter K.
Okay.
And then we built three of those units are finished at Faribault now. The fourth one is being finished this March, and we'll move offenders into it.
Thank you.
So if I understand this, in other words, you're saying in 09, in fiscal year 09, you really, if you had asset preservation dollars, you would have prioritized 11.5 million for asset preservation in 09?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
That you would see an argument either for safety or security or...
Or simply beyond the useful age. We've got tuck pointing at Red Wing, for instance. The age of the building is 119 years old, and that's 50 years past when we probably should have been doing some of that tuck pointing there. So, Madam Chair, these projects we think could go to design and be ready to go by summer if there was funding for that.
So, members, there were actually 4 handouts for this little section. You got the summary of the large projects for 5, 6, and 8, and then asset preservation to show what was encumbered and available, and sort of a look at the future. And I think we have no more questions.
So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Department of Public Safety. And I don't know if Tim Leslie, Chris Idy, and John Kerr are all coming forward, but whatever. And I believe you have one handout that has the text of the laws.
That's correct.
And the progress report. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, Tim Leslie, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Public Safety. I'm joined by Chris Idy, the Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. A little unique in that the Department of Public Safety, only of the lists I provided you, we only received actually two of those. Most of those are N grants that we grant out to local units of government, and we do not have any asset preservation, general obligation bonds as well in any of those session laws. I'll start with session law 2005 and then work towards the future, towards today, if that's okay, with your permission. In session law 2005, there was a grant for general obligation bonds to Blue Earth, the city of Blue Earth, to design and build a fire and police station. That money was appropriated and has been extended. In the laws of 2006, there was $1 million for the design, construction, furnishing, equipment of a regional public safety training center. That was in Scott County. In talking to Rob Bowe, the director of the training facility in Scott County, the monies were used for infrastructure work, utility relocation, fiber optic, conduit, drainage, and hydranting. And that money has been expended as well. Now we're up to 2007. In that session law year, we had a large appropriation to the floods situation in southeast Minnesota, and that's why Chris Idy is here. If you want additional information about that, we can go into depth. You'll note that there was a $13 million appropriation. 4.7 of that was encumbered, 2.5 roughly was expended, and 5.8 remains uncommitted in that amount. I'll keep going if there's no questions. There was also a grant for debris removal and burial. That was $2.5 million. And then we're into the laws of 2008. In the laws of 2008, the Anoka County Forensic Crime Lab received a $3 million appropriation for a forensic crime lab for use by Anoka, Sherburne, and Wright counties. I spoke to Sheriff Bruce Anderson today about that project. They have 8 to 9 subcontractors working on that project every day. There are approximately 50 workers there. Most of the structure is enclosed. They have the first floor walls are being taped in sheetrock. Concrete flooring on the second level was poured yesterday. Parking lots have been received their first layer of asphalt, and they anticipate completion of that project in early October. Next up is the Camp Ripley Training and Exercising Center. That was a $5 million appropriation. We had a planning charrette, which is a French term for CARP, that the military uses for scoping a project, setting priorities, and making decisions. We did that late last fall. We have a pre-design ready to go. We will have bids on the pre-design in, I think, by tomorrow. That is actually a grant to the Commissioner of Administration. We have an interagency agreement with the Department of Administration to have the Department of Military Affairs actually do that work for us. Next up is the City of Marshall. I'm sorry, City of Gonvick. That was the line item veto.
That was the line item veto.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And then the City of Marshall, they had a grant for the City of Marshall to get $300,000 to design at the Merit Center a wind energy training center and ethanol fuel training area. I spoke to the city manager in the City of Marshall yesterday. Unfortunately, due to the language in the bill, it was to pre-design. They do not need pre-design. They need actually a construct and props down there. So they will be coming forward with I think there's a Senate file on this, number 375 by Senator Fredrickson, and co-authored by, I think, in the House by Representative Seifert. They're going to try to change that language so they're able to use that $300,000 immediately. The Nassau Public Safety Facility with line item veto. Scott County Public Safety Training Center is next up. That project plan letter was delivered to this committee on February 17th, and they are actually operational in Scott County. They have their shooting ranges are live, and they are operating. And then lastly is the Rochester, Southeastern Minnesota Regional Public Safety Training Center in Rochester. There was a 3.655 appropriation. Spoke to Sheriff Steve Von Wald about this yesterday. They have contracted with an architect. The county does not have the property yet. It was a contract agreement. They will receive the property. Olmsted County will actually take possession of the property in, I think it's the early first quarter of 2010. At that point, they will begin construction once they have possession of the property, but they have not spent a cent.
Now, as I recall, it's a little fuzzy now, but I thought we put some language in that said, because clearly Representative Tamar argued on several of these issues that we were moving into an area that has no end and that carries certain costs with it, and in some cases even competes a little bit. And I think we were asking for a study, right, Representative Tamar?
Madam Chair, if you're speaking about the Anoka lab, there was rider language that was included in the capital investment bill that asked, but before Anoka was actually approved, that asked for a study on the future of regional forensic crime laboratories. That would have been very similar, I might add, to the study that we had tried to use for the expansion of public safety training centers around the state, so we weren't having a proliferation of these centers. And unfortunately, politics being what it is around here, the Anoka lab was approved regardless of the opposition from, at least it seemed, the Department of Public Safety at the time, and clearly from our committee. So I'm not sure that the study was completed, Madam Chair, but I'm not sure what meaning it has in the long run if members here can simply get a bill because put on the capital investment bill because they can get the votes for it. So we have two very good studies that ask for a very methodical analysis of where these labs and where these centers should be located. So we're not expending state money on duplication of services, and quite frankly, no one pays attention around here. So we may as well toss both studies in the toilet.
He is exactly right. I mean, I thought I'm happy you were able to be here because, I mean, it is given the huge needs that we just have. I was just looking at the language, the crime lab strategic plan. The Commissioner of Public Safety must develop a long-term strategic plan for maintenance and staffing of existing state and regional crime labs and creation, maintenance, and staffing of new regional and local crime labs. Must include but not limited to, and then at least six issues. Must submit the plan by February 1. You probably got that, and it would have been very helpful, but
we have it, Madam Chair.
But now we have moved forward with all of these centers.
Yeah.
Representative Rukavina.
For Representative Payman, I voted no on all the public safety and corrections projects as they left the committee because I think the whole thing's getting out of control. And so I was just wondering, maybe a question to the testifiers, do they teach any common sense at these public safety training centers? Because I've seen where some of the Homeland Security stuff, it's like, if I could sit here and take a half an hour and tell you a couple of siege situations where some young mentally ill kids called in 911 and you know, it ended up like 80 cops there and then ram the house down and shoot tear gas in there, and then nobody pays for it, and the insurance company won't and the sheriffs won't, and you know, I'm at wit's end. I think there really should be some kind of citizens to committee to review what some of these people are being taught in these training centers, because it's getting to the point where I think, you know, it's out of control. But do you teach any common sense at these things?
No.
Seriously, I'm it's a serious question.
Oh, it is a serious
question. I would have never done what they did. A young 23-year-old kid that was being regulated on for bipolar situation, and you know, they're blasting tear gas, and the mother, when it first happened, there was only three or four police officers there. She's standing in the yard saying, listen, I know what's going on. There is no hostage in there. Me and my boyfriend were the last ones there. We left the house 10 minutes ago. We went to the dump. We're back here. Let me walk in and get my kid. No, if you walk in, I'll arrest you. But when it's all over, there's 80 cops in the yard, and they bring the Homeland Security device that's got this telescoping thing on it. It's a Humvee or something. Somebody gets to drive it, ram the door down, spray in tear gas, and now 2 years later, nobody's paying for anything. So it is a serious question, because it has to do with public safety and Homeland Security. And I have said for years around here, the worst thing that ever happened was the police officer standard training board. But I'll probably get arrested on the way home tonight. Junkie, you're driving.
Madam Chair, and
it frustrates the hell
out of me. Representative Rukavina, you know, that's a tough question, and I'm just one person with my opinion. Most of the training center scope and training is skills, is technical skills, shooting, driving, putting handcuffs on people, those kind of things. We hope that when the police officers are hired by individual law enforcement agencies, that they have the common sense and that they're mentored and trained and led appropriately by the leadership of those individual agencies. But I can't speak to the situation you referenced. I have seen situations. I ran a SWAT team for 3 years in the city of St. Paul Police Department. I know there can be a mentality that takes over and common sense starts to lose focus. That becomes all about officer safety and not citizen safety. So I've seen that happen. But I can't comment to what occurred. I apologize. But actually the training centers are more for skill, individual technical skills. And Madam Chair, members, we received some money through some Homeland Security grants to restudy the look at public safety training facilities across the state, and we just received a draft of that. It's long. There was a tremendous survey done. I can't remember how many pages. It's over 100. But it's gonna position us for the future on these requests that do come into this committee on public safety training facilities, whether they're needed or not.
Well, I just thought it was important for us to hear Representative Tamar's comment, because on in this section of the bill, we really failed to do things in the right order. That study should have been done. We simply should have said no to absolutely everything until the study was completed. And I think once in a while it's important to revisit a failure, and this might be one of those. Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, sir, could you give us an idea of when does the department become an advocate for a project? Because you talked about, in your review, you talked about some that were vetoed.
Mm-hmm.
And then you talked about another one that the language was wrong, but they're going to ask again. And that sounds like you think that's a fine project. But when we were putting the bill together, we didn't get an idea of which projects were going to be vetoed. And so when do you become the spokesperson for the projects after they were not vetoed and come back to us? Is that because they weren't vetoed, then they're yours? Mr. Leslie.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, I am asked for my advice when these bills come to the governor's office. And in particular, Gonvick and NASA, for example, appeared to me to be an attempt to build a new fire station or police station with state bonding money. And then I look at state interest. Is there a state interest or need in that need for a local unit of government to build a new facility? And if you ask my opinion in that instance will be no. There's no state interest in it.
We didn't have Mr. Leslie here last year. We had the commissioner. And I think we were hoping for some strong direction, but at least at that particular meeting, it wasn't forthcoming. But I suppose, Representative Tamar, that Subdivision 5 doesn't happen, and they do have to go through your committee if they want, because that automatically cancels unless they come to you for a language change.
Not sure where you're...
The Marshall, the Minnesota Emergency Response and Industry, because the language is not right, we don't just transfer that.
And I'm sure I might add that this is another, you know, concern that, you know, doesn't just sound like this. No, it's frustrating because this was, we reviewed this proposal and ranked it very low in terms of priorities for training centers, and all of a sudden it gets $300,000. And it's not because it was Representative Seifert still that I had a problem with. We had a problem with the project. And there's other, you know, it's just like there's no, either there's a process that, or there isn't, or why, that we shouldn't have this charade, and I...
Representative
Murphy.
Madam Chair, Mr. Leslie, I just for clarification, now I sat on Public Safety Committee last year and went through all this and understood, asked for the study, and then I sat on capital investment for years. And I just want to know now, then you give advice to the governor, okay, and so you said those two projects weren't good. Then you weren't here when we were going through the project, the commissioner was, but then you became the advisor to the governor? Is that what I gathered from your wording?
Madam Chair, President
Mr. Leslie. Murphy.
No, I don't become the advisor to the governor. I get asked an opinion as a member of the commissioner's staff.
Okay.
And I offer my opinion.
And then you carry it, then the next, but now it's the next year. Are you and still as and giving advice to the governor on these things, or are you giving advice to us?
Well, I think I would venture to say the governor, when they do the either the signing or the vetoing, usually the agencies give advice.
That's correct.
At that point.
And then does that advice disappear and you become neutral again for the next round? Or are you still an advocate or an opponent?
Mr. Leslie.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy. I've been involved in this with a large conglomerate of people. Fire chiefs, police chiefs, sheriffs, emergency managers. And we study this issue and try to determine what's best public policy, and then we try to bring that forward to you and try to explain that to you and what we think is that. That's what the genesis for the Camp Ripley site was, is that we went on a tour of what's available in Wisconsin. We went to Camp Ripley and saw the fact that they have $19 million they're investing in their facility, and we thought about what is the most needed public safety training facility. And they came forward to me and said, it's the statewide Tier 3 center at Camp Ripley. That's the best bang for our buck. And if we're going to go forward with one thing, that's it. And that's what I brought forward to you and advocated for in the governor's office as well.
And Madam Chair, and I remember that discussion, and my rating went up a little on that one. I mean, I wasn't big on that at the beginning either, but I at the end I said that was okay, but I never did understand this other one that wasn't put in with the right language.
Okay. Thank you. I think that's it.
Thank you, ma'am.
And we have Department of Admin. We probably won't finish, but let's just take a quick look at what you've got and decide how much more time we need.
No.
So we have two, three.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Nikki Ginkola. I'm an assistant commissioner in the Department of Administration. I think my summary will go fairly quickly. You have a handout. I'm going to talk a little bit before I get to the slides there. But let me just start off by saying for those new members, the Department of Administration is responsible for the buildings on the Capitol Complex. There are 21 of them, and it's a little over 4.3 million square feet that we're responsible for. In 2008, the Department of Administration received roughly $105 million in capital appropriations. Between the capital bonding bills and the transportation bill, we received a total of $37,322,000 directly to administration, and then another roughly $68 million was appropriated to admin on behalf of other state agencies. Of the $37 million to administration, which is referenced in page one of your handout, $3.4 million was for CAPRA. The CAPRA account, it stands for Capital Asset Preservation and Replacement Account. It's a statewide fund that's administered by administration. It's a source of funding that provides rapid financial assistance for agencies in the event of emergencies and the need for unanticipated hazardous material abatement. It helps keep agency funds available for ongoing operations, and because of its quick availability, it helps mitigate further damage when we run into emergencies. The CAPRA account, the appropriations by year, starting with fiscal year 05, we received $3 million. In fiscal year 06, $4 million. And in fiscal year 08, $3.4 million. The balances in those appropriations for 05, a little over $46,000 is remaining. For fiscal year 06, about $219,000 remaining. And the fiscal year 08 appropriation is still fully available, and so that makes a total balance available in the CAPRA account of about $3.7 million. The specific CAPRA projects are listed by year and by agency in the legislative summary report on CAPRA, which I believe you all have a copy of as well. We're required to file that each year. In addition to CAPRA, admin also received in 2008 about $18.2 million in the transportation bill for repairs to the exterior of the Department of Transportation building here on the Capitol Complex. We received $2.325 million for acquisition of the property at 639 Jackson. That was a one-time opportunity due to the Central Park United Methodist Church wanting to sell, and the appropriation was to demolish the building and develop temporary parking on that site. And then $13.4 million was for Capitol building restoration. And I'd have to stop and say of the buildings or the facilities managed by administration, the Capitol building is our building in greatest need of attention. It has deferred maintenance now in excess of $100 million. This appropriation was to address the most pressing needs, for instance, exterior water infiltration, air handling units that were at risk of failure, internal rain meter leaks and deterioration, and then to provide a professionally estimated condition assessment for the building. Admin did not receive any specific asset preservation appropriation in 2008. As far as asset preservation goes, though, we did receive $2.5 million in 2005. Our request at that time was $6.6 million. We got $5 million in 2006, and the request at that time was $6.2. Bonding and asset preservation for those years are summarized in the asset preservation legislative report, which I also believe you have a copy of. As the overseer of state building construction, the Department of Administration also receives appropriations for a number of other state agencies, and you have that on the last page of the handout. It's summarized by department, but these are representative of the amounts of projects that administration is managing. We're also required to report on asset preservation, as I mentioned to you, and specific use of the funding is listed by project in that report. So with that, that's summary comments.
Could we, is that $100 million in deferred maintenance on the state capital available?
Yes.
By project?
State agencies report to the Division of Real Estate and Construction Services their estimated amounts of deferred maintenance, and we do have that list for administration buildings, by buildings, and it's available. We can provide that to you.
I think because we were always looking at the
restoration, kind of taking the building apart and putting it back together, we never just approached it from the perspective, well, what if we just do the deferred maintenance? What is that? That's the first time I've heard that figure, $100 million.
Okay.
So if we have the opportunity to see what that list looks like.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, the list is by building system. They report on roofs, exterior, mechanical systems. Wayne Roslofsky here is probably far better versed in that than I am. His division is the one that collects that information on a statewide level. So, any comments?
Madam Chair, we can certainly provide the detail and backup on that. As Ms. Giancola was indicating, it is a comprehensive assessment of the building systems and their status. And I think you heard from Department of Corrections on looking at it from a useful life standpoint on what's the remaining useful life of systems and then estimating what that cost is going to be to replace those systems. So we can certainly provide that.
Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, as you know, we were meeting on that capital remodeling. There was a lot of conversation about the heating and cooling system. And when they provide that information to you, I'd be interested in that part of it in particular, because that was also one of the costly items that was a part of the restoration and what they might have been recommending there. You know, they were actually talking at one point with the restoration about a separate facility where the cooling system would be housed as opposed to in the current basement, and I'd just be interested in how they were handling some of that kind of thing with that $100 million.
And the other thing we got just recently is a picture of the Capitol grounds with about 20 items that had been identified that would require mitigation or would be property loss or something relative to the construction of Central Corridor. Is somebody negotiating with Met Council about mitigation costs on those 20 items?
Madam Chair, members, we've been meeting with the Met Council project team for over 2 years and have discussions have been, as the design has progressed, so as our understanding of what's included in the project budget and what's not included. And very recently, Madam Chair, I think you're aware that we've expressed some concerns with what the baseline budget is presenting to us. And we've requested Met Council provide us more detail on what exactly that's going to look like, the streetscape plan is going to look like as the LRT goes through the campus. We've now received a preliminary list of what's in the budget and what's not in the budget, and we do see a number of impacts that are not being funded by the project. And Madam Chair, so far it hasn't been very open to negotiations. We've mm-hmm. expressed our concerns, but I think the project has obviously is very concerned about the project budget, and so there's I wouldn't call it an impasse, but I guess it is what it is, essentially. Mm-hmm. I think our obligation is to present back to the stakeholders on what it's going to look like, and then see if the committee's interested in providing other funding sources.
Yeah.
Or
we shared that with the group that's the Capital Restoration Group, but that group has ceased to function now. So maybe because there's no other group, maybe we would just share that group of 20 items to this capital investment group.
Madam Chair, we'd certainly be happy to do that.
Okay. And actually, Tom Hansen would like one of those.
Oh.
He saw it in my office.
Okay.
he said he'd like one too.
Madam Chair, we'll make sure he gets one.
Okay. Well, I think we are out of time, and I don't know if you, what was the day you were suggesting if they could?
March 3rd.
Any chance you could come back on March 3rd?
Madam Chair,
we might look over this and see.
Question.
We'll talk to you and see whether we need to do that.
Okay.
Representative Scalzi.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move the minutes for February 12th and February 17th, 2009.
Any questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries, and those 2 minutes, 12th and 17th, are approved. And next time we close out the rest of the report. So hopefully we'll try to figure out with admin whether we need more time. So, did you get your request? Did you understand Representative Carlson's request to include the heating and cooling on this?
Madam Chair, if I could just offer comment on that. One thing our facility condition assessment is doing is really just looking at replacing what's existing. If we were doing restoration, we were doing the mechanical systems in a quite a different way. So I think the number that, and I'll check on the how that number was put together, but likely what you're going to see is if you just replace what's there, what would that cost look like? I think we know there's issues with the control of the heating, the HVAC system. There's issues with the amount of ventilation we're getting in the building. The idea with the restoration was to upgrade the systems, not just replace what was there. So I guess we'll have to, when we're presenting that back, we'll certainly explain exactly what we're...
Yeah, and Madam Chair, I guess part of what my question was, if you were replacing the heating and air, you remember part of that design when we were working with the restoration group was that some of that equipment was to be placed outside the Capitol, and what I was asking was essentially where you're going to replace it or where you're going to put it when you replace it. That was kind of inherent in that question because it had been, I remember that, I forget what the term was, but there was that box that was going to be
the air handler. The air handling unit.
Yeah, I'm sure the vault system. We had vaults on both the north side of the Capitol and the south side.
As part of that planning?
That's part of the restoration plan, and that was...
And then what I'm asking, Madam Chair, is whether that's... When we start talking about $100 million, yeah, what you were doing with that $100 million in terms of correcting one of the big problems that we saw when we were going through the basement area of the Capitol with the equipment and the difficulty getting in there and maintaining it and so on.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, we'll go through those numbers, but my sense is that is not solving that particular problem. It's not moving the mechanicals out into vaults.
And that's what I was trying to find out. Yeah, thank you.
We'll probably have some conversation with you and try to figure out that Capitol Restoration Committee, I think, has been discontinued, and so maybe we'll have a decision whether this committee needs to have a discussion about it just so that it doesn't get lost entirely. There are some obviously maintenance issues that...
Madam Chair, I would just offer it'd probably be good for us to explain, give a breakdown too of how we're spending the appropriations.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Obviously, the Dome project, we can give you a more detailed update on our investigation of that issue and how we're approaching
We'll probably have you back.
Okay.
Okay, meeting adjourned.